Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have 3 married sons, 9 grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
On today's episode, I'm joined by Jessica Brown, a passionate dietitian and speaker who helps women break free from diet culture. You're going to love this episode. Well, I'm so excited today to be joined by Jessica Brown. Jessica, thank you. And we're going to call you Jess. I know that that's how you love to be called. And honestly, we were actually just chatting right before we came on and started recording this podcast that you went to high school with our oldest son. Yeah. And we're talking about homecoming pictures in our backyard. And little did we know, all these years later, that we would hook up and go to church together, and that you'd be friends with people you went to high school with. It's just,
I know.
The journey is amazing.
It's so cool.
Truly welcome. And now you're a big shot. I mean, you were in high school when I first met you, and you are a registered dietitian. You host your own podcast called Fuel Her Awesome. I think that is an amazing title, by the way. And you do so much to help so many women, mainly with just everything we deal with, honestly, starting in our teens through our later years in life. So again, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm glad that I knew you back then, honestly, and just super glad to have you today.
Thank you. Oh, I'm so excited to be here. I think I love the name of your podcast too, Table Talks, because like two parts. One, I love the idea of gathering around the table. Like there's so much substance behind that. And so I love that. And then I have so enjoyed listening to this show and all the different topics you've hit on. So yeah, I'm so honored to be here. Thank you. And yeah, those pictures are funny. I know which ones you're talking about.
I just love seeing, hearing people's stories. Like everyone that I've had the opportunity to have on this podcast so far brings something different to the table. And I feel like chatting with friends, and I learn so much from every podcast. But then I know at 63 and a half years old, if I'm still learning, then so many people are still learning. And isn't it great that new information comes out all the time and we're smarter than we used to be, and we don't have to live like we used to live, even when it comes down to our food and about the way we look. So we're going to jump right in, because I have so many thoughts and questions and topics in this short amount of time that I want to bring up with you. But just to start it off with your personal journey. So what inspired you, first, to become a dietitian, and secondly, just to start the podcast? Because you said you started it, mentioned to me, in 2021. Mm-hmm. So you've been going at it a few years now.
Yeah. So I'll start back. Becoming a dietitian, I think, was long in the works before I was even in college. But I think, like most women or most girls in high school, I really struggled with how I looked. And, you know, going through puberty, I didn't really ever, I mean, I did obviously go through puberty, but like my body never changed. I was always a sporty kind of look. And so I think right off the bat, I always felt like I didn't measure up to being like what a woman should look like. And so it's like right away from a very early age, like Satan planted these lies in my head about how I looked and the value that was weighted in how I looked. And so then I went to college. I'm the oldest. I was the first to leave my house, went out to Colorado, was not in a good place, like with faith, with who I was, just not a solid place at all. So I just fell apart when I went to college. And I developed an eating disorder. I was living in a house where all four of us actually had a different kind of eating disorder. So I struggled with bulimia. My best friend was anorexic. One had binge eating disorder and the other had kind of this like mixed bag of disordered eating. But it was really a terrible place to be, because all of us had so much insecurity and we brought that all in under one roof. And it really just fed the lies that were already in my head. And so God has been so good to me, so good to me. You know, like we were talking about that picture of me in homecoming with next to, I went with Dustin's, one of his good friends, to homecoming, and my parents were like praying I'd continue to hang out with Dustin and his crew. And I just didn't. Like, I took a Christian sabbatical, I call it. I went and I was around, I had a boyfriend that really did not speak life into me. I continued to date that guy in college and just had no faith in my life, but God really held me through all of it, to be honest with you. I look back and I go, I can just see God holding me every step of the way. But what ended up happening is my best friend actually almost died from anorexia. And what ended up happening, she went to a dietitian and the dietitian saved her life. And so when I saw that unfold, I think like I wanted my friend to be okay. And I was also looking for help. So I thought, I'll become a dietitian. And, you know, I think that's a really great thing to do is like look for purpose in what we do. And God uses, he creates beauty from ashes. But at the same time, like the initial parts of my journey, we're still trying to fix myself, right? Like I hadn't gotten the help. So I ended up going back to school. So I graduated in Colorado. I ended up moving back to Albuquerque. And that's really where God met me all over again. And I met my husband. We've been married. We're coming up on 18 years. We're going to turn 18 this year. And he really just brought faith back into my life like a speed train. I mean, he brought me back into the church. He loved me unconditionally. So when I met him, I had just chopped off all of my hair. I mean, I had like this little pixie cut, which did not, it was not my look. Like, I don't know why I did that, but, and I had just like kind of started to pull away from my eating disorder behaviors. And one of the things that happens when you struggle with an eating disorder, it messes up all kinds of things. And for me, one of the things that had happened is my face had become really puffy because of some of the behaviors I was engaging in. So I just looked like, honestly, like I did not look good. I was not physically healthy, but my husband met me and just really loved me as I was. And we were friends first. But that's really when God started to pull me back into just his world. And, so I went back to school to become a dietitian and started just learning about food. And because faith was a part of my life again, learning about food from this new stance of like, rather from being insecure about food, just starting to learn about it from more of a curiosity standpoint, I think like God just totally transformed my heart. And I just fell in love with how he designed food to meet and nourish our bodies. And so slowly but surely, a lot of those eating disorder behaviors fell away. I don't think the confidence in myself really came until later, but I did go to therapy. I got a lot of support and really came out of that. So that was where it all started. So then I worked in dietetics. I worked in an eating disorder clinic for about 13 years. And I would say that's where it really solidified that I can't let these lies run in my head anymore, because if I let them run in my head, I can't help these other people. So it really became about like, I have to lay these insecurities down and just believe that God loves me as I am. And I am good enough, because if I don't believe that, how can I help this teenage girl that's coming to me? And yeah, so lived that for a while. And then like my journey with food kind of takes this roller coaster. So that was quite a roller coaster. Really came to a place of peace with food and really gratitude for my body more than anything. And then I had kids and introduced a whole nother world where, and then, you know, with kids, comes a lot of fatigue and wear and tear on your body. And I'm getting older. Like things start to change. Hormones start to move around. And so, started to come to a new place with food of learning how to, what I call take it to like another level. So I felt like I was at this place of food freedom, but I really wanted to go to this place of empowerment with eating. Like I want to know how to really take care of my body so that not only do I feel freedom with food, but I feel really good and I have a lot of energy to do all the things God has on my plate. Not just like having leftovers from my family. I want to come home and have extra energy to engage with my family after a full day. So then my journey with food kind of took on a new direction about learning more about it, learning how to understand the body, work with it. So yeah, so it's been kind of a roller coaster. But I know each step of the way, it's been just like amazing to see how God connects our journey with food to like unveiling things in our life to grow and that's my story.
So for I mean, I'm thinking the whole time you're talking, like the all the girls that were in your that you lived with in college had some, you know, sort of eating disorder. And I'm just thinking, wow. I mean, and I'm sure it took a long time for you guys, for you, I don't know about them, but to even say, I have an eating disorder. I'm sure it was masked for so long as I'm just, I don't even, so I'm already lost going, wow, I can't, that's just, it blows my mind, but I hear it so often. I mean, it is not, doesn't blow my mind because I'm like, oh, I've never heard that. It blows my mind that it happens so often.
Yeah. Well, and actually that's a great point. I didn't even know I had an eating disorder while I had it. I didn't recognize that I struggled with bulimia until I was in school as a dietitian reading the diagnostic criteria for bulimia.
And yeah, it is so prevalent. And I was talking to someone before, maybe a couple of weeks ago when I said I was going to have you on the podcast and a lot of people today will say, and I know social media is a big deal, but I mean, there was no social media. There was we didn't even have a cordless telephone in our house. We had the only picture we took of each other had to go to the store to get developed. So there was no social media, but body image was still a huge thing. You know, even I'm a 70s girl, went to high school and graduated in 1979. It was a really big deal. And I was really thin and probably thought I was big then. But it's crazy to me how it's always been an issue. And it's been an issue. I know men struggle, but it really is so prevalent with girls and women.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, you mentioned when you were a teenager, you're always more of an athletic body. I don't remember that when I saw you, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And so you it already put that in your mind, and probably no one knew enough at that point to affirm where you were with that, that everything was okay, that nothing was wrong, but we didn't know, right? We didn't need to affirm daughters or to affirm, you know, we've learned so much. So now that there's knowledge, we should act better, right? We should react better. So you mentioned a moment ago about, so you have this podcast and I know you cover so much of this in detail on episodes on your podcast. And again, it's Fuel Her Awesome. And it'll also be in the description and you can find it, but you talk about empowered eating and that sounds, you know, it's a perfect alliteration anyway, empowered eating. But what you tell me, I think I know what that means, but I'd love to hear your definition and how does someone start practicing? So that's just question number one, what's empowered eating? Because it's really intriguing.
Yeah. So that was my kind of leveling up my game with food after I had healed my relationship with food. It's kind of this weird thing. I don't know if you've ever felt this, Kate, but like after I had the eating disorder and there was so much pressure to like look a certain way or manipulate my food and eat a certain way, it's like I had to go through a season of healing and just not think about food. You know, I had to just eat the cookies because I could eat the cookies. I had to eat all the candy because I had told myself for years I wasn't allowed to eat the candy. So I went through this season of really like rebellious eating. And I think that was really necessary in my journey to come to that place of peace. But it had, after I had Bruin, my oldest, I remember I had a session with a client and I was telling them how many fruits and veggies they're supposed to eat. And I came home and kind of like thought to myself, I don't eat that many fruits and veggies. Maybe I eat one or two. And so what empowered eating is really looking at like, what is important to how we want to live our lives and how does food fit into that? So in that season of my life, I was really tired. I was a working mom. My husband, he was on the SWAT team and a detective at the time. So he was on call for two things. He would be gone for like 23 hours out of a day sometimes. So we just had a very stressful, strained season in that time. And I thought, I can't just eat what feels good right now. I need to eat and nourish my body in a way that allows me to have the energy to match this season of life. And so if we look at what empowered eating is, what I like to do is lay it out in three parts. So first and foremost is your values, what's most important to you. And so like in that season of my life, it was my family and being able to serve my family. So we want to hold space for that. And then instead of thinking, you know, how can I mold my life around food? How does food actually fit in to what's most important to you? So that's one pillar. The other two pillars are what I call biofeedback, which is how your body responds to what you're doing. So for example, in that season of my life, I was eating whatever felt good, like literally like ice cream for dinner, whatever I wanted. I was also in my 20s, you know, we can do those sorts of things. But I had that and my body didn't feel good. And so I had to start listening to how does my body respond when I eat ice cream for dinner versus how it feels when I have something more substantial. And then the third pillar is going to be nutrition science. And this is really where my job comes in because there is a ton of nutrition science out there. I mean, we could probably pull articles to support just about any thought anybody had about food. But what's important is learning how to filter that through your biofeedback and your value system. And so what I work to do is help people pull those things together and really braid them together so that they can feel good about what they're eating and do it from a place of empowerment, not guilt or nervousness. It's really like, no, I'm choosing to eat this because it fits my values. My body says it's okay, and I know it's fueling myself in a positive way.
And I follow you on Instagram, and I see a lot of your videos. And on days when you'll be eating something and saying, "I just wanted to have this," because that leads me to my next question. Because as soon as so now I'm in the more twilight years of my life, but for decades. After kids, mostly, so my 40s and 50s for sure. I was always on a diet, always on a diet. And so then I was consumed by food because as soon as someone says to me, I can't have something, that's all I think about. So I think about, you said, I can't have no carbs or I can't have this. And so I think in our culture and because of social media, we are aware of every diet. It's out there because now it's just in front of us all the time. And if you ever click on one of them, then 400 come up on your screen. And so I love, I feel like that you really work to shift people from a diet mentality to more intuitive eating. Like you said, just the empowered eating, but more intuitive eating and based on, what your body should have or could have, because honestly, literally, at this point in my life, because I feel like if I were to have to stick to one thing, like one, I would just, oh God, I'm horrible. I'd be off the wagon by tonight. Which goes through a fasting time and you can choose what you want to fast. And so, and there'll be things, times I, fast for a spiritual reason. And when I'm not fasting, I could do it all day long. As soon as I start fasting, I'm like, oh gosh, I've got to have, it's a mental push as much as anything else. So let's talk just a moment about the whole, the diet mentality versus just intuitive eating because, food's good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's connection too, right?
And it's how, it's all, the only thing my family that we do when we socialize, it's around a table. I have a whole cookbook, called The Table. And it's because so many good things happen around the table. So I love this because I feel like that what you're saying supports that.
It does because I think we need to value the connection food has and brings to our life. I mean, the entire Jewish culture is built on feasts and gathering around food. And so I think to say that food is only supposed to be fuel is naive and not really in alignment with how God designed us to eat. I mean, we're supposed to break bread together. That's really a part of our faith. And so I think that's really
bread. Jesus is the bread of life. Bread.
Right. Right. Carbs, bread. We need it. So I think what I really like to do is have conversations with people to help them align again, their health and how they interact with food with their values. And I think where it gets tricky is we do have a lot of cultural pressures and people sometimes want food to align with their values, but it then doesn't, their body doesn't match that. So what I mean by that, weight gain over time is really truly the natural progression of aging. And the reason for, I think of it like, we were just talking about our forehead lines before, before we got on here. Like my forehead lines right now.
Hey, there's mine.
Yeah, we got them. See, they're there. But nothing's wrong with our forehead. This is just part of what happens when we age. Our forehead is not broken. This is just part of being on the earth longer than we were when we were in our 20s. The same thing happens with our body. There are changes that naturally happen. Like we just don't maintain as much muscle. We do start to shift and hold more body fat. Our metabolisms do start to slow down. Our responsibilities change and our lifestyle change. So we slow down and we're not exerting as much energy. All of these things are very natural. And I think what happens is we can internalize that and think, oh, something's wrong with our body because it's changing this way. When really that's just what happens. Now we can do things about it, that we can absolutely do things, but I think that's where it's tricky, because we have to see, we have to look at, are the things it would cost to maintain the body you want worth it? Like, is the cost worth it? And is it in alignment with your values? So that's where the conversations get to be more of a conversation, because it's tricky. It's really tricky.
What do you feel about specific diets that limit food groups? What do you feel about?
Yeah, I do. I'm not a fan because of what you were just talking about. It's, I call it the don't touch that syndrome. Like, you've raised boys. I have two boys. If I say don't touch that, they are immediately like drawn and like, okay, but what happens if I touch it? Like, how many, what if I touch it a little bit, would that be okay? You know, and that's, we don't outgrow that. We do not outgrow that. And so I think the limiting diets that remove foods really set us up. But the thing with empowered eating, so when we actually look at like creating a diet based on your body's biofeedback. So for example, right now, I just took this test to look at my gut and measure my gut. I've got some gut issues going on.
I saw that on your Instagram.
Okay. My gut's a mess. It is. Oh, it's such a mess. I have something that it's a bacteria that if left untreated, there's a risk it can turn into stomach cancer. And so praise God, I found it. But to get rid of it, it's actually pretty easy to treat, but it does require removing certain foods and making sure I have a certain amount of fiber. And there's some things I have to do. I will tell you, changing my diet because my body told me something is so much easier than changing my diet because I watched a TikTok that made me afraid of eating bread, right? So I've actually done a ton of things to my diet in the last few weeks. I feel fantastic because my body's responding well. And that's a much more empowering way to make a change with your food as opposed to doing it from a fear base or from a random diet that somebody else said was okay. So yes, I have a strong opinion. I don't like them.
When my husband and I, my husband Galen, you know him. So mm-hmm. We're crazy and we, no, I don't anymore, but we would always grab a fad diet because we're going on a trip and needed to lose. We wanted to lose 10 pounds. We wanted to lose 10 pounds in our 30s and 40s and 50s.
Yep.
And there was one called a military diet and you just basically ate hot dog weenies and ice cream and pickles. It's hysterical. And I went in there with a hot dog weenie, I put it in the microwave and then a cup of ice cream, and people have laughed at us. We have done literally, we did everything.
Okay.
One time I basically lived off lunch meat and pickles.
Oh my gosh.
Gearing up for the boys' weddings because I really had to lose 20 pounds to get in my dress. The seamstress lady, she said, it's not going to zip. I mean, she said, that's 20 pounds before that.
Yeah.
We've done it all. And
oh
we,
my gosh.
Everybody's, if it came out, we did it. So it's funny to me because, yeah. So do not follow me for your dietetic needs, because obviously we kept doing it for years, so nothing worked. But I think that's just an amazing thing for, I mean, I'm really a firm believer in gut health and the microbiome and microbiome for your gut, microbiome for your skin. And that's a whole other podcast episode, but I really do know that that's not a fad. It is truth. It is a true thing. And the balance of a microbiome, the balance in gut health is an important.
It's amazing. So, it's amazing. Wait, can I ask you a question? Do you have something you wish like you could tell your 30 or 40 year old self, the one that was trying all these different diets and doing all these different things? Is there something like, what would you tell her if you could talk to her today?
Oh gosh, what would I say? I would say, don't sweat it. Honestly.
Yeah. Right.
I worried so much, but I also worked out and I enjoyed it, but everything became such a chore because everything was built around a certain size I wanted to be or a certain weight I wanted to be or how I looked in a picture. And honestly, when you get to be in your 60s, you all kind of look the same anyway. So I would have said, just be healthy and enjoy your life, because you don't get those decades back. They're not coming back. And here we are. You know, I've seen my friends at a high school reunion this summer. We all kind of look the same. So I'm like, all that for this?
Yeah.
So I would say, don't sweat it. Just be healthy. I mean, you know, be
so good
be enough that when you're in your 60s, that you don't have regrets for how you treated your body. But I was constantly trying to, and it can't be good for you. I don't have the degree in it. My degree was in teaching kindergarten. Mine's early childhood education. But it has to be a correlation to keeping things, making your body sacrifice things to health problems in the future.
Yeah. So, well, and I love to hear you say that. I'm so, thank you for saying that. Cause I know there's people in that age demographic who are listening that need to hear that. They need to know, don't sweat it. And cause my biggest thing with that is I really believe the enemy uses this as a tool with women. He preoccupies us with it and gets us distracted and obsessed with it. And I just like, I think back to the times I've lived in that obsession, and it stole years from my life because I was so focused on it. And I was, you know, that's where my attention went. I wasn't worried about helping other people. I was worried about my 5 pounds that I wanted to lose, which is just, I want to go back and hug her and say, you're so much more than that.
And for me, there are years that there were not many pictures of me at all.
Oh.
I mean, pictures because, or I'd hiding behind someone because of the way the way I looked, the way I felt I looked, and it all works out in the end. When it all works out, honestly, I mean, and for your health, you have to pay attention because of diabetes,
sure.
heart disease, and all the things. But, you know, I just wish I lost time that I wish I hadn't have lost.
Same.
And the same, all the things. But, you know, you're talking about intuitive eating and what your body needs. And I was watching your post this week or last week about your test you did with your gut. But what do you think people, what would be common misconceptions about intuitive eating? Why someone wouldn't do that? Or I already have in my head before you said it, what I think, you know, intuitive eating to me is, well, it's different than I know what the real answer is. So what do you think people think it is? And it's really not misconceptions.
Great question. So intuitive eating is based on a book written by two dietitians, and there's 10 steps to it. And I do love all of the steps. It's like reject the diet mentality. No foods are off limits. Like it really does help people heal from food. And then step number 10, oh, and part of it's throw out the scale, which I really believe in. And not everybody likes when I say this, but I just don't believe in scales because I feel like they distract us. It's like,
you would not like this.
I don't know. Are you weighing yourself
every morning?
Hey.
Okay, but you know what? But you're not old. When you get old, you kind of have to weigh too in case you're losing weight for no reason.
But don't you think your pants would tell you?
No, but listen, I strip down to totally. They ain't a thing. And when I go to the doctor and they say weigh, I'm like taking off my one little earring. I'm like taking every, I'm like, can I just go ahead and strip? But no, but I mean, I weigh every morning because especially, you know, I go to the doctor all the time when you get older too. And I don't want any surprises when I get there.
Yeah, I can understand that.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you could go by how your clothes fit and stuff, but no, I'm an anomaly. No, most people
don't. No, you're not. Most people do that. A lot of people do. And I think, you know, if you can get on the scale and it doesn't redirect or ruin your day, that's a different story. But I do have, and I was like this for a season, and I have many clients that it's like their entire day and how they structure their day is based on that one weight. And the reality is women in general fluctuate between 5 and 10 pounds in a day, in a single day. Yes, I have this graph where I've tracked my weight and throughout a day, and like all the different variables are on this graph. So it's like early morning in my birthday suit, you know, I go to work and I'm actually in clothes. So obviously I'm up a little, I ate breakfast, then I go to the bathroom and it drops, right? Like, and I showed this whole fluctuation, but what's really cool about it is I get back on the scale the next day and I don't show the number I weigh, but the change in my weight, but that weight the next morning is like 0.3 pounds different than the day before. So the reality is our body has this incredible regulating system and we have to work, we have to do some pretty extreme things to change it in either direction, whether it's to gain weight or lose weight. And I think when we weigh ourselves every day, if we don't have a healthy mindset, we can think like, oh my gosh, my weight's up 3 to 2 pounds because I did this one thing. Like, our body's not that fragile. It's actually more of a pattern and a rhythm that's going to change that body weight. Not like you can't really ruin your body in one day. You know, you can't do anything so catastrophic with food in one day that's going to change it. So yeah, that's why I feel that way about the scale. Cause so many women will see it and it'll just ruin their day.
I absolutely, yes to all you're saying. I believe that. The battery on my scale is low right now. It came up and said this morning, I said, oh, it's telling me I don't weigh much. But our battery's low. But anyway, people do not listen to me for your nutrition advice. Because I'm just me. And so, okay, get it. We're going to move on because I have three other index cards taped to my computer right here that I have to get to before we're done.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
People want to know. So we do go to church together, but that would be irrelevant because, you know, wherever you went to church would be fine. But that's how I got to know you again. And I know how strong your faith is and how you feel that faith, your faith really has been a big factor in helping people too, because I mean, I don't know how I feel about this and what I think the answer is, but what do you think about a connection between spiritual health and physical health? I don't know how I feel. What do you think?
Oh, I think it is such a strong connection. I think it's probably the most under-talked about connection. Actually, C.S. Lewis says this in the Screwtape Letters. Have you read the Screwtape Letters?
Yes. College.
I love it. I call it my recon work. Like, I read it to like study what the enemy might be doing. But one of his letters, he talks about how he says he uses gluttony, the word gluttony. And he says, gluttony is one of the biggest successes of our team in the history of the church because we've actually removed the discussion of gluttony entirely. And then he goes on to talk about it's not just gluttony in excess, but it's also gluttony of perfection. And I think a lot of times our endeavors with health, while they're important, because yes, we have to take care of our body, we have to steward it well. I think so often our endeavors of health can become almost like a gluttony for perfection with our body. And we want everything to be perfect, whether, you know, in our 20s and 30s, it's about how we look. I'm getting into my 40th decade and now it's starting to become about health. Like, I want my health to be perfect. But at the end of the day, like, health should never be our God ever. And so I think it plays a huge role, actually, a huge role. And I want the church to talk about it more. I really do. Both for, I think, women, but even our teenagers, like, they need to hear these kinds of things. So I think it's really deeply connected. And I will tell you, in working in this field, like, I get to sit with so many different people, and there is faith trickled into everything that I do, but I don't have like a fish stamped on my business, right? Like, I work with people of all different faith backgrounds, and the folks that have a faith have a different approach because I can bring this into the conversation. And when I say things like, Paul talks about it in Corinthians. I don't remember the place, but he says, he's talking to the Jewish folks and he's saying, whatever you eat and drink, do it for the glory of God. And I can bring that to the conversation when somebody has a faith base, and that can look a million different ways. Like, that might be, like when I was at the eating disorder clinic, I would get donuts with a lot of my clients because they needed to learn how to eat a donut and not have an anxiety attack. I think that's eating food for the glory of God, right? And that's a donut. There's nothing nutritious about that. Me having a very nourishing salad or rice and chicken or something really nourishing that gives me energy so that I could come here and do this podcast with you, like, that's for the glory of God. And if we can look at food as a way to feel and take care of our body for the glory of God, it changes everything. It changes everything. But the folks that don't get to bring that into the conversation, it is hard because they're chasing perfection with their health or their body, and they're not going to find it. And so it's a dead end road.
It's a really hard race to run when you're chasing perfection. Like, and I feel it in so many areas of our life, and you can't ever reach it. It's that rabbit. When the greyhound's chasing the rabbit, like at we had one in Mobile, Alabama, and they can never catch it because they're never meant to catch it. So we're never meant to catch perfection.
So good.
And when you're saying that, I'm thinking we're not going to get there. I mean, there's been times in my life where I feel like I've been at a pinnacle and really close to and reached goals that I set, but perfection, and our society now really teaches that, and we see it and breathe it and eat it. And
oh, so, yeah.
Leading me into another question is, I know that you believe in this, is helping people to get over not having guilt or shame with their food choices, because I even can be people, I don't take a lot of guilt from people. I just never have. And, but I still can feel myself sometimes when we go to a women's thing and everybody goes, oh, I'll just have the salad. And I'm wanting to have you know, a turkey jack, or, and I'm thinking, I was wanting turkey jack and fries, but I have the salad with the dressing on the side.
No.
You know, so that really can work on me. And I don't know. How do we get past that? How do you teach clients and people to not feel guilt or shame over their food choices?
That's such a good question. And probably one of the most common questions I get. And I really think it means, or I think to answer that, you have to be able to answer what's healthy for you. You just have to know, and you can't be, you know, that can't be influenced by the folks around you. It has to be what you've decided is healthiest for you. So, you know, I've mastered this with my food. I have not mastered it with other things in my life. So when I talk about this, I just want y'all to know, like, I definitely have struggles. It's usually just not with food. It's with shoes. That's where I'm like, I want all the shoes. And then I feel guilty for buying the shoes, you know? But when you think of, like, if I know, okay, I'm going to take care of my body and eat and food as fuel most of the week, I'm going to be really intentional about that. And I am, like, we eat pretty healthy in our house. We went out on a date on Wednesday night and I got these nachos that are so delicious. They're covered in cheese and they have crumbled hot Cheetos on top. I mean, nothing about these nachos.
What are the nachos that you love?
It was a Bosque.
Okay. There's a place we really love their nachos in town, and I feel like it's the best ones. It's Brew House. It's called
Brew House. Yeah.
What's it called? What's the whole name of it? Anyway, while you're talking, their nachos are so good, and that you can have
so
red
good.
Green chili. It's so good. Anyway,
so good. But see, okay, so those things are delicious.
Today, I've had chips so far. So I'm hungry. So
you're hungry.
Yeah, all the problems. Anyway,
this is a tough podcast to do when you're hungry.
That's what I was trying to tell my husband. He came by. He was putting a little chicken together and a little yogurt with some honey, and I'm like, I need something. So I get the big bag of the fiery sour cream cheddar chips, and I'm having a handful of chips before I get on with the dietitian.
Okay, so here's how you don't feel guilty about that. You have to just know why you're eating what you're eating and why, and that's it. Because if you know, like, okay, I'm eating these Cheetos because I'm hungry and I've made that decision, like, okay, great. You know, and then if you go with all your friends and they're eating salads, but you want, you know, whatever it is, the nachos, and you feel good about that, like, there should be no guilt. I think there's a different, I mean, we can use this language in the Christian realm. There's shame and there's conviction, right? Those are two different things. And I think if we feel convicted about something, maybe we should look at it. You know, if I'm not spending any time thinking about breakfast and I'm grabbing something on the go that doesn't make me feel good, that's bad for my blood sugar, my microbiome, I might need to feel a little conviction about that because I need to steward my body well. But that's very different than shame. And I think if we can, like, separate those two, we'll know what to do with them.
Great point. That's a really great point. And that's just things people, if they're listening to this or watching and they hear that and think, I want to dive into that more. That's something really you could just, you know, Google someone or ask AI, what's the difference in shame and conviction?
Conviction, yeah.
And that's a great, great point that you made. And which also leads me into, you know, people that then don't know how to break free. So they've shamed themselves for so long about their choices. And I also know this. I know there's people will go out with friends and to look a certain way, will eat the cottage cheese and peaches or whatever, heaven forbid, but then go home and eat a half a gallon of ice cream. So it looks good in front of people, but in the quiet secret place, they're just doing whatever just because they need to look a certain way. So breaking free so that we can get rid of those. And that could be therapy. It could be, you know, getting in the word more. It can be telling a friend that I'm doing this?
Yes.
Because, you know, I know that. I know that about people. I know they're choosing healthy in front of me, for Pete's sake, I don't know why. And then, but they're going and eating whatever. And I'm thinking, don't do it. This is not good for you.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and face what the problem is. So
yeah.
How to break free from the, you know, living a different way or negative self-talk or,
Yeah. Oh, just hearing you say that, like, I just want to hug that person because I've been that person, and it's a really painful place to be, to not feel like you can be your authentic self. So I think first of all, is just knowing you're not alone. Like if anybody resonates with that, whether it's that scenario, whether it's negative self-talk, or it's doing weird things with food. I mean, if there's one thing I can tell you, we all do weird things with food. I mean, I get to sit down with so many different people from different walks of life. And it's so funny, Kay, like people come in and they're always so nervous to tell me what they do. And I just always, I'm like, you are not going to surprise me. If you tell me something new, great. I learned something new. But people, we all do it. So you're not alone. And I think the best thing we can do is just start talking about it. And that's something I wish, you know, we didn't have so much shame about, and that we could just say to our friend, hey, I did this last night and I feel really weird about it, because I think 99% of the time, especially if you say that in a safe place with a trusted friend, they're going to look and go, I did that last week too. Or hey,
me, they'll say they're going to come in and have coffee and they're going to, you know, and they're saying, when I tell you my story, and this is not about food necessarily, when I tell you my story, you're going to be in shock. You're not going to believe it. I'm like, I'm not going to be in shock.
Yep.
I promise you, I'm not going to be in shock, because everybody has something.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. Isn't it crazy? And so I think that, you know, and you don't overcome feelings of guilt and shame or breaking free of negative self-talk. That doesn't happen necessarily overnight. I know that God can do the miraculous, but it doesn't always happen overnight. And it's a journey, right?
Sure.
It's a journey that you keep going on all the time. And if you need therapy, get it. And if you don't know you need therapy, I think everybody does.
I do too. I do too.
Christian therapist, and you find a good one that you connect with. Mm-hmm. And if I always say this, if we talk about it on here, but if they need to know, they can always DM me and I will give you a list if you're in the Albuquerque area, mm-hmm. or find someone in your area. I have a lot of connections with people all over the country, and I can get them hooked up with, you know, who they get them hooked up with someone. And that's, you know, I feel like that, don't be afraid of therapy. And then, as we're getting toward the end of this, it goes by so fast. I wish it was a lot much longer, but I would love to know just real life nutrition, like for someone like me, like some nutrition tips. And also, I think that you often speak of discipline without being obsessive. I feel like that's critical, because I'm obsessive by nature. I'm an OCD kind of person. And anyway, so what's some tips, and how do we not be obsessive with this whole thing? What do you think?
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so maybe we'll start with some practical tips. So like some practical nutrition tips. So I do have what I call the foundational four. So like the four foundations of solid nutrition. And this applies to people regardless of age. We need adequate protein. We need adequate fiber. We need adequate hydration. And then I always add in there a morning and nighttime routine. And I don't necessarily, I get up at like a crazy hour. I'm crazy.
You do.
Yeah. But I've always been that way. So I'm not necessarily saying you have to get up early and have this like gnarly morning routine, but I do think we need a morning ritual, a morning routine that sets us up to be mindful and present in the day. And that's going to look a little bit in different people. And then a nighttime routine where you kind of close out the day. And that's a really healthy practice when you're trying to make nutrition changes, because what that's doing is you're engaging mindfulness. You're engaging your prefrontal cortex, and half the problems people have are not present when they're with food. And so I include that in the foundational four. So that's a really, like, you can do so much with those four things. So much.
How much does somebody drink every day? Like, really, not you, but like an average person.
So this is where I think your biofeedback is awesome. I mean, we could calculate a number and tell you a number, but really pee until your urine is clear or lightly colored.
You know,
that's it.
You know how much I drink a day? I do drink a protein shake in the morning that I make. This is horrible. I probably drink 30 ounces of liquid.
Okay. Does your body tell you it needs more because
No,
it's.
it does. And I don't, it's crazy. I know I'm off. I know what's wrong. I'm not
Yeah.
a thirsty person.
But I mean, not by your thirst, because your thirst actually doesn't kick on until you're dehydrated.
Okay,
So,
so that's good. I'm not
yeah.
dehydrated probably, but I'm like,
Well,
people like drink it all the time, then big old containers in
I
their hand.
know.
And I'm like,
That's my
girl, how
husband.
can you be that thirsty?
I don't know.
Stop.
I always joke my husband pees on the way into Costco and the way out of
Oh, that's so
Costco. Like,
healthy. Yes.
it's
See,
great.
I'm a project, but okay. So how much, like, I'm sure it's at least triple that what I drink.
Yeah, probably. You'd probably be looking at like 75 ounces minimum, would be my
That's
guess.
awesome.
Yeah. So, just like a couple more water bottles.
Okay, I'll start
Yeah.
immediately.
So, yeah, I think though you can do a lot with those four things. If people just worked on their protein, hydration, and fiber, and then morning, nighttime routine, I mean, you can change your life with those four things. On the discipline versus obsession front, yeah, that's probably a deeper conversation, but I think that's super important to, I guess, define discipline. So discipline means doing something, but I think discipline also involves not making that something our God or putting it on a perfection pedestal.
That's good.
And
That's
so
you
that's,
alluded to that. I mean,
yeah.
discipline and if people are obsessive by nature, it's sometimes hard to toe
Yeah.
the line, because when I start to get disciplined on something, I over obsess.
Yeah.
Finding the line between, so I think that's all just such good food for thought, because I love what you say so much on social media, but it's balance is a really sometimes overused word, but it's an important word, and you say it so often. So everything we've said in the last 40 minutes is something to consider. Just everything you've said. I don't want to rehash it all because I'm thinking it through again as we sit here. I feel like you've just said so many good things, but and into just to toward the end here, I feel like you mentioned this a few minutes ago, but we get so much conflicting advice, honestly. Whatever, if I Google, I can get 25 different opinions in the next 5 minutes about what I should be doing with my body. How does someone pull all those kinds of advice into what may work for them? Because I mean, when I say conflicting,
Yeah.
I could do one thing and somebody else going, no, you're going to die doing that. So how do you know what to do?
Yeah. I mean, I joke, this is why I have a job. Literally, because there is so much out there. And I think, I have an accountant for a reason, because I don't know all the stuff about finances. So I need to go to someone where I can say, does this new tax law apply to me? Is this important for me to do? And so that is why I have a job. And so I think, like, yeah, talking to someone that knows this would be really a helpful place to start. And I think also just like not being, maybe being more skeptical of those things instead of looking at them, because oh my gosh, there are new things coming out every 5 minutes on the internet, right? It's fasting, and then it's this and the carnivore diet. I mean, there's always something. And
Fasting thing. I hear so much different.
I
Anyway,
know.
we don't have time, but
Yeah.
I hear yes and no and yes and no. And I love your approach on so much that it's listen to your body and fuel your body.
Yeah.
I love
Yeah.
that. I'm
Yeah. I mean,
sure
the
you
answer,
have an opinion
it
about it,
depends.
but
What's
yeah,
that?
I'm sure you have a definite opinion about
I do, but my answer is it depends. Like
that's
it depends on who you are and what you're doing, what your goal is, and what your age and all of it. It totally depends.
Wow. That's why you go to a professional. That's why people
Yeah.
take spiritual advice from someone who has never opened a
Yes.
Bible.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Like you might want to
Exactly.
go to people that read the Bible to get your spiritual advice.
Exactly. Yeah, that I will say that's one of my pet peeves, Kay, when people are like, TikTok told me, and I'm like, TikTok does not have a master's degree in nutrition.
Exactly. And we get everything, our news,
Everything.
everything we do. Well, currently off TikTok. Who knows how
Yeah,
that's
I
going to be?
know. It might shut
I mean,
down.
when this airs in a
It might
week,
not.
we'll either
Yeah.
have TikTok or we won't. So we'll see about that. So, okay, as we close, just one more really good thought about nutrition, because I know that you, no pun intended, you live, eat, and breathe this. Truly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all you think about and you help people. But for an average person, you know, like me, that doesn't, you know, that my whole focus is not, I'm not, they don't have a bachelor's or a master's in nutrition. What advice could you give me that I could do today to start making a positive impact on my body, my nutrition?
I would say create healthy rhythms, not rules. So find rhythms in your life that really build a healthy lifestyle and make sure they're not rules, because you got to play. You still have to enjoy life. You still have to go on vacation. You still are going to have sick days where you don't do it. So yeah, I would say build rhythms, not rules.
I'm a horrible rule follower, and
me too.
when people give me a rule, I'm like, oh, watch me break that.
Same. Okay.
I love that. I feel like life is about rhythms and seasons too. Mm-hmm. Also, life is rhythm and seasons. So if our food and our nutrition is too, that is so good. You've honestly, very enlightening episode. And I've the passion that you have behind it is evident that you care about people and you care about what we're putting in our bodies and for our own good, not just so you have a job.
Yeah, true. Thank you, Kay. I mean,
you've got job security, girl, because people aren't changing. They're always going to need help. You have job security. But gosh, I hate that. I feel like our time has come to an end, and I really hate it, because I've so much enjoyed chatting with you. And you're a gift to so many people. And I mean, the word on the street is Jess Brown. I mean, I've heard only positive things. Aww. About what you do for people and how you've helped them on their nutrition journey. So honestly, I'm thrilled to have you on this podcast. I'm thrilled that it's airing in January when people are trying to kick off the new year and they're excited about, you know, they're going to do the right thing in January, right?
Yeah.
So again, thank you so much for saying yes and being a part of this with me. And I loved our time around the table. Thank
you. Thank you so much, Kay. It's been an honor to be here.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kaywoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.